Robots Radio. Games, lore, stories, community. Just press play.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Robots Radio presents.
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello, welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
And we are your lore master and lore mistress extraordinaires.
It's true. We're pretty extraordinary.
We just are obsessed with D&D and can't stop talking about it. Can't stop, won't stop D&D for life. We're not any, you know, we are no different than any of you listening. We both put on our pants, you know, one leg at a time. And once those pants are on, all we do is think about and read about D&D. So
that's true. Also just going to throw it out there. If you don't feel like wearing pants while you're reading about D&D, I don't judge, because no shame.
I mean, if I'm in the comfort of my own home,
that's what I'm saying. Not in a public bookstore, but in the comfort of your own home. There are caveats.
Yeah, I am. There is very seldom, it is very unlikely I am wearing pants. Shorts, probably. I'm not Winnie the Poohing it over here, and I'm not Donald Ducking it over here. But this is a D&D lore cast, where we talk about D&D lore. We're obsessed with it. What are we talking about this week, Mary?
We are talking about the Duergar, or the Grey Dwarves. They go all the way back to first edition, have been a part of D&D for a very long time. And like I mentioned earlier, when we were chatting before we got started, they've literally been around longer than I have.
Yeah, original. Like, I mean, we're about to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've been in everything from games, novels, adventures, dragon magazines, and so much more. I had to cover these guys next after we've been talking about the Underdark a little bit and cover the Svirfneblin. So it was a lot of information.
There's no better idea than if you find yourself in the Underdark than to continue hanging out in the Underdark. Of course, right?
That's a great idea.
Never
yes.
Ended badly for anyone ever.
For anybody. No, that's not foreshadowing. In the cities, deep in the Underdark, live the Duergar, or Grey Dwarves. These vicious, stealthy slave traders raid the surface world for captives, then sell their prey to other races of the Underdark. They have an innate magical abilities that to become invisible and temporarily grow in size. That is how they are described on D&D Beyond.
That's gnarly. So not only can you sometimes not see them, but you're like, oh, it's like just a little guy. And then it's like, no, it's not anymore.
Just a giant invisible dwarf.
Jeez. That's how I die. You will die booping an owlbear.
I will
die getting stomped by a giant invisible dwarf.
Invisible dwarf. And then you'll probably have it coming. I will too.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. You're not wrong.
It's true. So these are a special, like a different species of dwarf that dwell in the Underdark, subterranean, like the Svirfneblin and the Drow. They're built similarly to any other type of dwarf. All of them stand about 3'9" to 4'3", or 1.1 to 1.3 meters for our friends that use a logical system of measurement.
Look, my car gets 40 rods to the hogshead. That's the way I like it.
Not a phrase. What?
You need to bone up on your Simpsons. You need to listen to my upcoming Simpsons Lorecast.
Gotcha. You do reference them a lot.
It's my brain is like, you know how like web browsers, you have like these temporary files to help you like access web pages that like websites that you like, you know, like your bank or whatever it may be. Like that's how my brain works, but like for work, like my job. But other stuff, like the Simpsons episodes, that stuff's hardwired in.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Sometimes I forget to eat.
That's, you know what? I can't judge. I also suffer from the ADHD, and it suffers me too.
Sometimes I get stuck reading about gray dwarves.
I do.
And I forget to eat.
It's true. Don't come for me like that. So usually these guys weigh in at about 84 to 144 pounds or 38 to 65 kilograms. But the similarities between gray dwarves and the hill and mountain dwarves, like what most of us picture, they're pretty consistent across the board.
Right.
I'm just going to throw it out there. It's a stereotype.
I am the more traditional image of a dwarf.
Exactly. That's kind of where they part ways.
Right. Okay.
The gray dwarves are usually a bit thinner than their brethren. Both males and females are bald. The females do not grow facial hair.
That's interesting. I was going to say as a baldo myself, I do appreciate that, but I have fun with my facial hair.
Oh, the males do grow facial hair. It's just not real pretty or well kept. It's kind of scraggly.
Oh.
And
whereas
unkempt.
More traditional dwarves, they like take pride in how in the right. length and the bushiness of their beards.
Right. So these, you know, the Dwargar have they're also easily distinguishable from other sorts of dwarves due to the ashen gray complexion and the black eyes. All of this matches perfectly to their gray, natural, stoic expression. Kind of a reflection of the dark, stony place that they live.
That's poetic.
Thank you. I'm poetic sometimes. Rarely, but sometimes. A Dwargar found above ground was often easily distinguished by their skin. But any doubt could be easily cleared up when you more than likely notice their facial tattoos. So any of these guys that are above ground, those tattoos are a sign that they have been marked as a traitor to their people and have been banished.
Interesting.
They are a medium-sized humanoid and labeled as lawful evil in the species info. In the monster stat blocks for them as well. But there are some really neat and awesome variations of them in there in the monster section that I think everybody should go and take a peek at. There was so many.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't get enough of any sort of like bestiary or monster manual.
Which I think would make them quite fun to be as an enemy from the DM standpoint, of course. So like other playable species that originate in the Underdark, they too have superior dark vision, move a whopping 25 feet, and they have damage resistance to poison. The Dwargar speak Dwarvish and Undercommon and have a couple interesting, I guess they're, are they species traits? Is that the technical term we're going with now?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. So they have Dwargar resistance, which grants on saving throws, sorry, grants advantages on saving throws against poison, spells, illusion, as well as having a resistance to being paralyzed or charmed. They have dwarven resilience, which is the advantage on saves that end or avoid the poisoned condition and have resistance to poison damage. However, they, like all the others from Down Under, and I don't mean Australia, they have a sunlight sensitivity. So they have disadvantage on attack rolls and wisdom checks or perception when either themselves or the target is in direct sunlight.
Interesting.
Not what I expect whenever I hear sunlight sensitivity, and it always throws me because, you know, I picture vampires in old school movies.
Right.
Bursting into flames. So at third level is when they gain that ability to cast enlarge and reduce spell, but it's only the enlarge portion of it. So they just get the first half there. On themselves, of course. And then at fifth level, they gain the ability to cast invisibility. And both of those are like wants per long rest. They're also blessed with psionic fortitude, which grants advantage on saving throws to either avoid or end the stunned or charmed condition. So mechanically, pretty solid in certain situations.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's in keeping with, like, you know, how a lot of species were created for D&D. Like, you know, they're, you know, in general, they should be, you know, a good compromise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with some, you know, with some stuff, you know, some situations where they're very advantageous, and then others where they're like, oh, what, this, I'm useless here.
Yeah, I do appreciate a good solid balance, though, because I'm not a fan of OPing something, because that's not fun to me. I like the challenge. So, speaking of challenging, let's talk about what these poor folks had to deal with as far as lifestyle, their culture, and a little bit of their personalities.
I mean, just based on appearance, they seem like a happy-go-lucky bunch. Would I be correct in that assumption?
I'm trying to figure out which picture you're looking at, because they are a grim and a pessimistic group of folks. Their life and their outlook on life is just bleak and brutal.
It's pretty metal, but go on.
They are pretty metal. I'll give you that. They viewed themselves as the perfect depiction of dwarvish ideals. And by comparison, they viewed their kin as weak and as pampered. So those pretty coiffed beards you were talking about earlier, that's that fancy pampered hill and mountain dwarf kind.
So
of
they're like the older generation of dwarves.
They are indeed.
Back in my day.
We didn't worry about pampering ourselves or having large, luscious, full beards. Need to work. And work some more.
And then when you're done working, work some more.
So they were, like all dwarves, brave, determined. But all those little charming but aggravating dwarven traits, that character flaws that we all have grown to love, they take all those traits to the extreme. They are not just grouchy, they are hateful. They are sullen, greedy, violent, ill-tempered cynics that take every grudge, real or imagined, and nurse it for however long they need to down there in the dark, where things are not so great.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly, for
that's
sure.
That's how I'm gonna, the Underdark. It's not so great.
That's like when a kid ask you like what's the Underdark like, and you're like, oh, I can't wreck this kid's mind right now.
It's
like
it's just not good, honey.
Yeah, it's well,
not so great.
Not so great.
Yeah,
I need that like that postcard, like, visit the Underdark, not so great.
It's got like a Google rating.
like Google 1.5 rating. Stars.
Yeah, not so great. No. So three basic things kind of outline Duergar life. They all exist pretty much bottomless greed rules their world. The rejecting of emotions, and they're kind of just an unending conflict. Just constantly starting shit.
I mean, as a species from the Underdark does, for sure.
Probably prone to it. So while they're used to this awful life, though, and accustomed to the enduring consistency of the inevitable struggle, that's just how things are to them. That's just how it is. It is what it is. But they did have a genuine love of sorts of industry, as much as they could love something. They did love their work. What others would view as labor and toil, they would view it as an opportunity to succeed. Kind of have this innate, primal, irresistible desire to create things and to continue to make things. Not necessarily for the purpose of creating art, but more to meet their goal of collecting more and amassing wealth and treasure as much as possible.
No, yeah, I mean, they have no interest in art or poetry as you or I do. It's all about survival for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they accept nothing less than perfection in their crafting, and they excel easily in their fields, never leave any job undone or even like half finished or half-assed. They take no pride in that mastery of skill, though, like other types of dwarves do, that are very, you know, very proud of their work and like to brag about it and show it off. But their high quality work was not made with concern for aesthetics. Like I said, things were built and made so that they could be used, needed to be useful.
Functional. I can appreciate that.
Exactly. They're not made for the love of the item, but because once it was made, they could make more and make as many as possible and sell as many as possible as quickly as possible. Got to have that quick, you know, that quick turnaround.
So what you're saying is they're like the like South Park of the Underdark.
Oh my gosh.
Is that what you're saying?
Go ahead and throw this out there.
That's what you're saying.
Say it.
That's what you're saying.
It's not a reference I can confirm or deny. That is over my head, sir, as per usual.
Oh no.
You missed the board with that pop culture reference.
I did. I mean, the whole thing with like South Park is like its animation style is such that they can literally like whip together an episode in like less than a week.
Gotcha. Then yeah, sure.
That way it can be so topical.
Okay. Well, yeah, sure. Sure. Why not? So you said they're not a real artistic folk, right?
Right, right.
Which is true, because they don't have like extravagant designs or anything like that in their weaponry, but they did create art. It was beautiful, depicting scenes of battles and depicted their cruelty and all of the blood they had spilled. Real pretty, real shiny. The well-made weapons that they, you know, left all that fancy stuff off of. They did this because, well, one, preferred it to be useful as a tool, and two, they viewed all of those decorations as wasteful and useless. But they also would cause a little bit of a concern if you're traveling through the Underdark. Anything with extra shine and sparkle and dazzle on it is going to increase your chances of giving away your position.
For sure, it's more visible, and that's just smart. More visible. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, this, you keep talking as if sense. Like these gray dwarves are, you know, not the greatest of species. But so far, I'm vibing with them. Like, it seems like they're just making sense. They're making a whole lot of sense.
I'm not going to say that they don't make any sense at all, because that would be silly.
All I'm saying is, where do I
sign
up?
We'll see.
Where do I sign up?
Oh, I see. I see. Well, they also have a fondness for magically created items as well, which is kind of interesting, because that's not typical of our stereotype dwarves.
True.
So they would usually have these items created that would help them to hide from enemy senses, protect their minds from being tampered with, or of course give them an advantage in combat.
I mean, when you're hanging out in the
created
same space
and crafted some items.
I'll say, when you're hanging out in the same space as mind flayers, that's definitely something you need.
Exactly. And the advantage in combat. They had even created their own items that were exclusive to just them, with bolts of battering, stone reaver axes, and things like absorbing shields. All of which sound amazing. Yes, please. Magic was an innate part of their society, though. Clerics were a very common thing. This was also a way for them to gain more power and more influence. They did have a tradition in their society of having both divine and having arcane magic, and their various types of casters were very well respected within their society. Power came with wealth and possessions. So they used these things to gain status and were not above stealing it or even waging war against others to take what they were entitled to, what they were owed. You see, strength was the pillar for societal status for them. The weak didn't really deserve to have anything.
Might makes right. I get it. I mean, I don't agree, but I get it.
Right. They showed no pity for the helpless or the less fortunate, no mercy for anyone weaker than them. If you can't defend it, then you don't deserve it. And of course, with that kind of greed, just as you would expect, they would harbor an intense jealousy of anyone that happened to be better off than them. They found very, very little in life that brought them any sort of joy. But weren't completely without any kind of pleasure or happiness.
I was going to say, what did make them happy? I mean, like, everything so far has just been
about survival.
They sound real
sour, yeah.
Like, yeah, like just kind of like, them surface dwarves and their fancy hammers with all the filigree and their well-coiffed beards. Damn, mind flayers. What makes them happy? Aside from, I guess, hating everything.
Take pleasure in the suffering of others.
Oh, fantastic, then.
Especially others that they would usually prey upon. You know, they enjoyed the capture and torture of other races, other species. Not in the, like, outrageous, over-the-top, flourishing ways. Like, you know, the drow are all fancy. Right. About everything. I know, it's more just
so extra.
Right. They're just more of just working them to death. Petty abuse, cruel jokes, that sort of thing. And they did this to bring themselves just that little bit of cheer in an otherwise joyless life. Closest thing to happiness that they could find was satisfying desire for treasure or feeding those violent urges, especially if those violent urges were while they were raiding the strongholds of other dwarves.
Well, I mean, all right, these guys, these gray dwarves sound like they're the worst, to be honest. I was gonna say, like, I sympathize with them a lot. You know, they're just very practical, functional folk.
I can see that. Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, they sound really, really bitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Having the ability to feel emotions, beaten out of you, gonna do that too. But it's fine. We'll talk about it more. We'll talk about it. We'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it after the middle of the show.
Yeah, give me a couple breaths. Let me get my voice back a little.
Because I mean, we do find joy, and a lot of the joy that we find comes from the stuff we talk about in the middle of the show.
That's right. Let's go. Middle of the show. Go on. Get.
I don't know where that came from, but let's go. Welcome to the middle of the show, the part of the show where that brings us the most joy, because we get to thank our patrons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We get to discuss new things in the D&D verse. Yes,
new exciting things.
And also get to discuss some homebrew stuff.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, thank you to all of our patrons, especially our newest patron, John N. Thank you for subscribing to the show. John will be getting early ad-free episodes.
Heck yeah.
And there's a bunch of other stuff that's available on the Patreon as well.
All kinds of crazy bonus content, stuff.
Merchandise. In fact, we just sent out our first batch of merchandise to our wizard patrons. And stuff like that. You know, we created the Patreon to give back to the community that is supporting us. And we're also, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we have planned, a lot of ideas that we have that are only possible through the financial support of the Patreon. Like, we appreciate every single listener, every single like word of mouth, you know, suggestion, recommendation.
Absolutely. Every penny of it goes back into making it bigger and better and getting more lore to you wonderful, amazing people.
More lore. That is the D&D Lorecast promise. If you are interested in supporting us in that way, you can go to patreon.com/D&D Lorecast.
Mm-hmm.
And if you forget the URL to that, there's links in the show notes every single episode.
It's true.
And you could also links to our link tree that has links to all of our social medias. The Instas and the Ticks and the Talks and the Twitters. And
there's just Lorecast links lollygagging lazily. So get to it.
Just hanging around.
They're just waiting on you.
You can also leave us 5-star reviews on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Ooh, yes, please.
If you are so inclined. It just helps the show grow and helps us reach as many folks as possible who want to know about the whose minds are wired in such a way that they want to learn all the lore. Like, all the lore needs to be learned.
All the lore.
And as far as D&D news, again, like, we're just barreling toward Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. I've already purchased my tickets. I've purchased 5 opening night, middle back row XD screen tickets.
Look at you go. I have not yet.
I have told my partner and my children, who have zero interest in playing D&D with me. No interest in playing D&D with me, but we'll hang out in a luxury lounger and eat popcorn and drink soda and eat candy while watching what has an 89% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
I know there was a thing over on Amazon that Prime members could sign up to get free early screenings.
There you go. So there's we'll link to that in the show notes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And something else that I found is that a few months ago, this was already last year, this was already available on GOG, but they released him on Steam. All the old Gold Box series, old Gold Box classic games.
Ooh.
Well, they're releasing now the Silver Box classics, as well as Spelljammer, Pirates of Realm Space, Fantasy Empires, Dragon Strike, and Death Keep. So all those games are going to be available later on in March. These are all from old PC games, Commodore 64, NES. These are all like old classic games. And they're all going to be available, be able to run on modern PCs And we'll link to both GOG and Steam, depending on, you know, which you prefer. But yeah, all those old games are all nearly unplayable. Not in that they're bad, just that they are so hard. Video games used to be so hard.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So it wasn't just that I sucked at games as a kid. It wasn't just me.
I mean,
maybe I just sucked at games as a kid.
I think like everyone had to. I mean, you had to. That's brutal, to get good, you had to like just keep
get
at
your
it.
Money's yeah. worth, young man.
But yeah, so those games are going to be out. It's very exciting because, like I said, I'm a fan of all things D&D, new,
here
old.
For it.
It's yeah, I'm absolutely here for it. But oh yeah, I was in the Silverbox Classic includes some Dragonlance games, Heroes of the Lance, Dragons of Flame, War of the Lance, as well as Shadow Sorcerer. So gonna be a lot of fun there.
Hell yeah!
And as far as the homebrew shenanigans, I was checking out the DM's Guild, and we are talking Duergar, and so I found something from Scott Holden. This is D&D Denizens Duergar. And this is a pay what you want with a suggested price of 99 cents. And it says, the Monster Manual provides only one Duergar, a challenge rating one creature. Out of the Abyss supplies a few more variations, but any Rage of Demons campaign or any campaign that is, you know, in the Underdark could use more options. The variations herein can provide you with a larger variety of Duergar characters, enemies ranging all the way from CR1 to CR5.
Ooh.
So you've got about 8 different Duergar types to throw at your characters, or to as friendly NPCs. And this has 4.5 star rating. I mean, for a buck, you can't go wrong.
Heck yeah. That's a solid deal right there.
And what I love, a lot of the things that I love about homebrew is, you know, obviously, like, you know, the passion that goes into creating it. But it's such a, you know, it's such an exercise in imagination that it helps, you know, the reader. It gives them ideas on something like, oh, like, this is cool. Like, but what if we did it this way? And then helps them create their own homebrew until we're in this, you know, perpetual motion machine of homebrew where it's constantly just being created. That's my dream, that
it's
we never stop creating
content.
Homebrew. Just an endless supply of homebrew content.
Homebrew, hallelujah.
I want that on my tombstone, actually. So yeah, there's going to be a link in the show notes to that as well. And anything else that we talked about, of course, always check the show notes. If you have any questions, you can hit us up on via email, via dndlorecast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on any of our social medias. Everywhere we are at dndlorecast. More than likely, you'll get the quickest response, the Discord, the Robots Radio Network Discord. Mary and I are constantly on that.
It's true.
If you at me, I guarantee I will answer within 60 minutes. I'm like dominoes. I'm like in your lore in 30 minutes or less.
Or your lore's free?
I mean, yeah.
Or I'll get you extra free lore.
We'll get you extra lore, yeah. But yeah, so we're always, you're never going to have to twist our arms to talk D&D lore.
That's true.
Speaking of not twisting arms, let's jump back into to the Grey Dwarf lore.
Beautiful.
Finish that up. All right. I like that. I'm getting good at these, I feel, at the segues.
Sure.
That didn't sound convincing. Welcome back as we finish up our Duergar lore. Yeah. So we talked about how just amazingly joyless they are.
And it's true.
So, you know, that's got to make for some pretty terrible relationships, right?
So,
what's your typical Duergar relationship look like?
Oh gosh. I gotta say, they're not great. Interactions between dwarves and gray dwarves are not good. The gray dwarves are very, very bitter. They feel like they were cheated out of their birthright, even cheated out of it by their own kin. See, they're raised to believe that betrayal is an inevitability and that trusting others, especially outsiders, that's kind of like forbidden, basically, in their society. It is just not done. We don't do that. They lack all emotion and take pride in not being weak enough to feel, essentially.
That sounds like that it's
Some
giving
alpha
emotionally,
energy.
that's giving emotionally distant father.
That's, yeah, you're right. So because of this, we don't have feelings. They're assigned a life partner. And this is done basically to ensure the continuation of Duergar. Individualism is completely irrelevant, and each member of society is expected to perform the roles they've been assigned to the very best of their abilities at all times.
I
But they.
mean, okay, so like we, most of us, if not all of us, are familiar with Dritz, the famous drow ranger who, shucked the ways of his people and forged his own pack.
Oh, shucks. So sorry. I could not
I
help it that time. It just happened. And I'm sorry.
can't. So I just feel like the Duergar are like just absolutely begging for their own drits, like their own
Oh, man.
but not like this not this very like conflicted, haunted,
Right.
character like Dritz was. Like I want like a Duergar that's like super flamboyant and like just over the top and just happy as can be.
I just,
Like, that might be my
yeah.
next character.
You sh Yes, please. I'm here for it. He could be a bard.
I mean, that's initially I wanted to say that, but I think that's too easy. I mean,
That's
maybe,
too easy.
maybe another class. I mean, like Bard for sure is would be the obvious choice,
Be solid, yeah.
but I'm,
Yeah.
but maybe something else.
They did. I can tell you this much though about Duergar, which maybe not so much a bard trait. They did hold on to that typical dwarven virtue of minding their own business.
Oh yeah, not
So
a bard. Yeah,
definitely gonna rule that out.
bards are
I don't
definitely
know
in
a
everyone's
single bard
business.
that minds their own business. Their business is not minding their business.
Their business is putting everyone else's business to a
Business.
melody.
Making everyone else's business a business. Ka-ching. So even though they're rough, unpleasant folk, they're very practical people, as you mentioned before. They're willing to sell and trade their, all of their wares with other species, sell things like thunderstones, poisons, highly effective armor lubricant, and military saddles. This is an especially smart move on, on their behalf, since they're on again, off again, on again, off again relationships with the other frenemies in the Underdark, the Svirfneblin and Drow, is at times a very complicated relationship.
Right. I could definitely understand that for sure. Because even the drow, as evil as they are, they're not, they'll go on raids, but they're not just like hell bent
Murdering
on.
for the sake of murder.
Right. Whereas, like your mind flayers, your illithids and
Right.
your aboliths and all the other creepy crawlies in the Underdark.
Everything else down there
Yeah, like,
wants
there's
to.
sort of like
So
this, like,
technically, the drow are good guys.
they're not the worst bad
They're
guys.
not the worst thing in the Underdark.
No, by no means.
That's what I want on my tombstone. Not the worst thing in the Underdark.
That's apt. I mean,
Exactly. They also held no love in their stone hearts for their closest kin, the Shield Dwarves. That's who the Duergar believe abandoned them to the, you know, whims of the aforementioned Mind Flayers, which is also why the Grey Dwarves continue to wage war against the Shield Dwarves from, you know, time to time on occasion. So they don't exactly make a lot of long-lasting friendships, what with them being kind of sour. And they don't typically go out seeking adventure either. It's usually a thing that's happened because they see some sort of profit in it for themselves, or they were excommunicated for their petty crimes.
Okay, all right.
Essentially. So, work or die. In the first case, you're useful. In the second, you are entertaining, is about the best way to sum up Duergar lives. Although they do live this harsh life, they were able to accumulate great wealth. They've, you know, purged themselves of weakness. And,
quote unquote.
Right. I'm glad you could hear my quotations. And run a very successful military. So you talked about their culture and they seem, I don't know, godless things, but they're not. Much like the various other peoples of Faerun and beyond, they typically worship, most of us typically worship deities that reflect, you know, our ideals. So this rings true with them as well. The Duergar, while some of them lean towards other members of the Morden Saman, or the Dwarven Pantheon, all of them acknowledge and respect this pantheon. Most of them worshipped Ladugger. He's the master of the craft, the taskmaster, driver of slaves, or also known as the Exile. Though some later grew to worship his adopted daughter, Duera, who was raised to godhood after stealing the invisible art from the Mind Flayers and helping her people. During the Spell Plague, however, whenever Duera and Ladugger were both dead, some of the Duergar, in desperation, went as far as to turn to an old friend of ours, Asmodeus, making literal deals with devils. How do they get to the point that they're at now? We'll talk about their history, and then I will let the listeners' ears go, as I've held everybody here for quite a while. So consider that the Duergar began as homeless outcasts, and today their fortresses are some of the most impregnable strong points in the Underdark. The question might not be if they conquer the realm below, but when. This was a quote regarding them from our good friend Mordenkainen.
Interesting.
So, the Grey Dwarves were once a clan of Shield Dwarves in the Dwarven Kingdom of Barakir, which was located in Shanatar, which is an ancient kingdom, like 10,000 DR. Negative 10,000 DR. Ancient.
Right.
Let's go backwards. Super far backwards. This clan also worshipped Ladugger as their patron. They continue to throughout history, and many still do. So he has been, that's been their guy since way back. They were an ambitious and bold clan, very powerful. They believed that they should be the ones ruling Shanatar. So this request of theirs had been denied after the second Spider War, which I just want to pause there. If there's a second one, that means
there's got to be a first.
There had to be a first. And this is a rabbit hole I will go on. I'm going to journey down. I need to know.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
About the Spider Wars.
Plural, yeah, absolutely.
Right, so they turned away from the other dwarven clans at this point, supporting the dwarven leaders with mere lip service only. It was in their selfishness that they turned to the isolation of the Underdark. And that is what drew the attention of the Mind Flayers at Orendal. So the Mind Flayers attacked Barakuir? Sure. In negative 8100 DR, enslaving or killing the majority of the population. Those that were taken were held in captivity for generations. They were warped and forever changed by the horrendous experimentation and the abuse at the hands or tentacles of the Mind Flayers. The deep, twisted magics of the Underdark and the things that they went through was what caused them to become a subspecies of dwarf. That is what sent that branch off a different direction and created... That's, you know, that time that shaped them into something separate than the Shield Dwarves that had abandoned them and left them to this fate. So the Grey Dwarves, tired of their lot in life, done being slaves, rose up, defeated their captors, and gained their freedom from the Mind Flayers. The newly freed Duergar carved out a place for themselves below the Great Glacier, founding Gracklestug in negative 3717 DR. The Deep Kingdom grew quickly, spreading throughout the northern reaches of the Underdark, reaching its peak in about negative 2600 DR. This is, what is that? 3,000 to 4,000? Like 3,000 to 4,000 years?
Oh, yeah, it was like three to four, about.
Yeah, from like 4, where we are current ago. Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, from current day.
So the Deep Kingdom grew for about 1,000 years.
Yeah, just kind of grew and spread throughout, you know. Following the war with the Quaggoths of Ur-Sandanthar, this kingdom found itself on the decline for many, many centuries to come. Beneath central Faerun to the south, Dunsparin is established beneath the... Okay, this... How would you go about this mountain range's name?
Orsron?
Is that it? Is it Orsron?
That's how I would say it.
I super tried to complicate it in my head. So it's
how are you saying it?
I was trying to read it as like Orsrayon. Like I was trying to separate things way too much.
It's O-R-S-R-A-U-N.
Feel Orsron. Free to weigh in and correct me anytime. I am here for it. this settlement of Dunsparin grew to encompass caverns from Termish all the way to the Dragon Coast, reaching the height of its power in negative 1800 DR when Queen Duera demolished the alliance between the Drow of Undreth and the Mind Flayers of Orodol, leaving her in a position to reclaim the older parts of the Dwarven Kingdom, Alatorin and Deep Shanatar. For doing this, she was actually raised to godhood by Ladugar. And after this, Dunsparin fell into a decline only to rise again during the Time of Troubles and then fall into, most recently, a grueling, arduous war with the Army of Gold.
And Army of Gold sounds dope.
Yeah, these are the Shield Dwarves. That's the other, the other branch.
Yeah, the Army of Gold is the name of an expedition of gold dwarves that set out from the Great Rift to reclaim the glory of Deep Shanatar, the lost kingdom of the Shield Dwarves. So you got a lot of different dwarves staking claim to this piece of property,
right? Trying to reclaim their legacies.
You also got the Army of Steel, which the name of the Duergar army. So yeah, the Army of Steel taking on the Army of Gold. That sounds awesome.
It's just awesome. These have been a lot more fun reading than I was anticipating. And I love learning species lore. Like, I like hearing about the people and where they came from.
And that conflict where the Army of Steel and the Army of Gold.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an ongoing war known as the War of Gold and Gloom.
That about tracks.
That's the best. That's the absolute best.
That's the absolute best. There you go.
Well, thank you so much for listening this week. We will be back next week with some more lore. If you're interested in even more lore than that, you can go to patreon.com/dndlorecast, where we have all sorts of fun bonus content each and every month. But yeah, again, thank you so much for listening. We are immensely humbled to be allowed to be a part of your lives each and every week.
Yes, yes. Thank you for listening to my mad ramblings and my brain rerouting itself mid-sentence.
That being said, my name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener, and until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at @DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at Robots.